Hey everyone, welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so happy you're here. This is a special weekend. I had my first annual event with Emily Bennington in New York City. We are planning on doing this event annually, so around the third weekend each June, which actually marks the date that the course was published. Judy Scutts used to have a party every year around that time, so we decided to just pick up the tradition and run with it. So I'm super excited. That'll be a yearly thing that we have going on. Let's begin, as we usually do, with coming together in silence for a brief period of meditation. So if you're moving around, if you're busy, if you are able, just pausing and stopping and turning attention from without to within. It is within this quiet space where we find the holy instant, this now moment. Just allowing our attention to settle and to join, connect with our willingness. And offering our willingness to our inner teacher, the Holy Spirit. As we give our willingness over to the Holy Spirit, we are making space in our own minds for miracles, for shifts, and for love to flow through us, because we're no longer clinging to a belief or a perception that could be blocking that love. So trusting tonight that we will receive what we need to receive, we'll hear or share what we need to hear or share. As we connect in this holy instant. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. So with the love in your heart and the light in your mind, taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All righty. So we are reading from a subheading in the CE. It's called The Transfer of Healing. And in the other edition, it's called The Healing Example. In the CE, it's page 816, in the CE, page 816, The Transfer of Your Healing. In the Sparkle edition, it is page 632. The subheading is The Healing Example. In the original edition, it's chapter 27, part 6. And in the FIP edition, it's chapter 27, part 5. So we're at The Healing Example, or The Transfer of Your Healing. And as always, we'll dive in, take it a paragraph or two at a time, and chat. Okay, the transfer of your healing, or the healing example. The only way, this is underlined in the CE, the only way to heal is to be healed. The miracle extends without your help, but you are needed that it can begin. Accept the miracle of healing, and it will go forth because of what it is. It is its nature to extend itself the instant it is born. And it is born the instant it is offered and received. I want to read that and emphasize that last part of that sentence again. It is born the instant it is offered and received. No one can ask another to be healed, but he can let himself be healed, and thus offer the other what he has received. Who can bestow upon another what he does not have? and who can share what he denies himself. The Holy Spirit speaks to you. He does not speak to someone else. But by your listening, his voice extends because you have accepted what he said. I love this paragraph. I love many of these sentences. The only way to heal is to be healed. So this idea elsewhere, the Course talks about the unhealed healer. So this is saying for true healing, the only way to heal others is to be healed. And the miracle, the nature of the miracle, what the miracle is, it automatically will extend itself the instant that it's born. So the instant that we have, and let's think about miracles right now as thoughts of love. When we have a thought of love, that automatically extends outward. We're automatically going to see that love in our brothers, have that love return to us. It's just the nature of what miracles do. They just extend of themselves. So we don't need to make those miracles go forth. They're going to extend on their own, but we are needed that they can start. So we're needed to start that chain of miracles. And we do that through our willingness to turn to spirit, through our willingness to not hang on to our beliefs and our perceptions. So I love how it also says that sentence that I emphasized twice. The miracle's nature is to extend itself the instant it is born, and it is born the instant it is offered and received. So there is that interpersonal nature of the miracle where we offer love. We offer love to our brother, and we then know that love in ourselves because we've offered it. As we give it, we receive it. The only way to receive it is to give it. So then it goes on to say, we can't ask another to be healed, but we can allow ourselves to be healed and thus offer the other what he has received. We don't necessarily do this through words either. Obviously, like for instance, with just my own healing with anxiety, I can share some words around that, but that's not necessarily what this is just referring to, that as we let ourselves be healed, as we are transformed, our using our spiritual vision, our willingness, again, to see through the eyes of love and to extend that love, we can give what we have received, which is that love. And then it goes on to say, the Holy Spirit speaks to you. He does not speak to someone else, but by your listening, his voice extends because you have accepted what he says. So we each have that capacity to listen to the Holy Spirit because the Holy Spirit speaks directly to you, not to someone else. You don't need somebody to translate the Holy Spirit for you or listen for you. The Holy Spirit speaks to you. And if it seems like you can't hear, that's the experience of many of us, if not most of us, at least at some point or another. And it is, again, just coming back to doing the work and pausing and practicing getting quiet, practicing resting in the holy instant, and really using discernment to start to distinguish between what is fear in my mind and what is love. So are there any questions or comments so far or examples? My mom told me about, I don't know who it was, but she said years ago she remembers coming across somebody who was like, hey, if you can't hear the Holy Spirit, I'll hear the Holy Spirit for you for, you know, a fee of whatever the amount of money was. And we all have that capacity to listen. I feel like any teacher should always be pointing everybody back to that fact that we need to turn to the Holy Spirit and not listen to anybody else's interpretation of the Course. Of course, it can be a little bit helpful along the way, but ultimately it comes down to you listening to the Holy Spirit yourself. Always. I shall keep reading. Health is witness unto health. Health is the witness unto health. As long as it is unattested, it remains without conviction. Only when demonstrated has it been proved and must compel belief. No one is healed through double messages. If you wish only to be healed, you heal. Your single purpose makes this possible. But if you are afraid of healing, then it cannot come through you. The only thing, and it's, again, emphasizing only, and the Course means it when it says this, the only thing that is required for a healing is a lack of fear. That's big. The only thing that is required for a healing is a lack of fear. The fearful are not healed and cannot heal. This does not mean that conflict must be gone forever from your mind, for if it were, there were no need for healing anymore. But it does mean, if only for an instant, you love without attack. An instant is sufficient. Miracles wait not on time. So when healing is demonstrated, that's what compels belief. And again, we can talk about healing in all forms. All healing is of the mind, but it can show up as a physical healing. It can show up in, a mental health issue being healed. It can show up, like Paula has shared so many times, quitting smoking. It's just falling away. When I co-taught the workshop this weekend with Emily Bennington, she shared how she used to have an eating disorder, and her eating disorder fell away in that same sort of way where we all try to heal this issue, whatever our issues may be, and then when we start doing this work, we can literally have an experience of it just fizzling, evaporating, just falling away. So when we hear stories like that, that compels our beliefs, that helps us develop our own sense of trust. I spoke about how, every time we have an experience of a miracle or listen to somebody else's story of their miracle, it's like we're picking up a big block, a stone, and placing it in a new foundation of trust that we can then stand on. And that stone is laid one by one with each experience that we have or that we hear about from another person. So that's why I love doing this group work, because we learn from each other and hear these stories that can be so healing for each of us. It goes on to say, no one is healed through double messages. If you wish only to be healed, you heal. But if you're afraid of healing, it can't come through you. So a double message, we read last week. I actually referenced this section over the weekend. I love the section that we read last week about the single or double questions. The double questions have an answer within them already. So I think one of the examples that I gave was, what can I do about climate change? Well, within that question is already an assertion that the world must be real if there's this problem, versus a question like, what am I, or where can I go for protection? Those questions don't have the answer built in them. They are purely open, single questions, and those answers we find in the holy instant. And that just reminds me of what we just read about, where did it go? No one is healed through double messages. So if we are asking double questions or double messages, like, how can, I can't quite think of an example, but if we have fear in our mind and we're actually afraid of healing, then whatever it is not going to heal, because there's a mixed signal. There's a mixed message in there that there's still fear, and yet we're asking for healing. And it said so clearly that the only thing that is required for healing is a lack of fear. The only thing. That's pretty profound.
Yeah, and it's just reading this and listening to you read this kind of makes me realize I don't even know what the fear is in certain situations. You really have to go deeper to see that.
Yes, we do. And you're right, we don't know what the fear is. I, though, can go straight to the place, and I know many of us have kind of touched on this too in previous calls, it's the fear of God. It's the fear that we're going to lose something, that we're going to be asked to sacrifice something, or that It's our fear of love. It's our fear of truth. It's our fear of God. I think that's what every fear ultimately will boil down to, which is great to think about it being we're not healing because we're afraid of God. If we then go to that issue, whatever the other fears might have been more surface level, they're just going to fall away. But that's where, like the Course says, you don't have to follow fear through all of its circuitous routes. Let's go to the one main fear, which is our fear of God, the guilt that we have in our mind because we believe like we actually are separate. Let's work on healing that, and then all the other circuitous fears that are, you know, that the ego could spend eons analyzing, those are going to get healed too because we're going for the big fear. We're healing that.
Wow. Yeah, the fear of God. I mean, can you give us an example of that, Corinne? That feels a little abstract to me. Like, I don't feel like I fear God, but obviously I do in many cases.
Uh-huh. So, let me think about this for a moment. And if anybody has any examples that are coming forward, please feel free to chime in. I often think about the fear of God. I feel like can take many different forms. Let's take control. So where do you not want to let go of control in your life? Where do you think you can control things better than God or Holy Spirit? Like right there is a reflection of fear of God, because we think we can do it better than God
can. Perfect.
Right?
That's absolutely perfect.
And that shows up all the time.
Yeah.
We hit those control issues all the time.
But I never really connected the two, because I'm very controlling at times. I mean, I choose to be very controlling at times.
Uh-huh.
We talked about that last week, and I decided once I realized it and handed the situation over to the Holy Spirit, it was healed right then and there. I mean, it was amazing.
Right.
So it's just that unconscious behavior, you know.
Right. The automatic behavior, the patterns that were, you know, the habits really of control and doing it ourselves and all those things. So that's where, again, this is moment-to-moment work. It really is. I also love in this paragraph how it says, it doesn't mean that conflict must be gone forever from your mind, for if it were, there'd be no need for it. Healing anymore, but it does mean if only for an instant you love without attack. So this reminds me elsewhere in the Course how it says it's not that you're going to stop having thoughts that aren't pure. In other words, you're not going to stop having judgmental thoughts or fearful thoughts. It's that you have none that you would keep. So this to me is reminiscent of that. It doesn't mean that conflict is going to be gone forever from our mind, but literally it just means if only for an instant you love without attack. And that's beautiful because it's saying for one instant you love without attack and then healing happens. If it doesn't seem like it does, obviously it's because we're still hanging on to Corinne. We're still hanging on to these bodies, these ego personalities, but loving without attack. This is where, again, it goes back to turning to our brothers and thinking of those brothers who we still have issue with and mustering up our willingness to see them differently.
Yeah, Corinne?
Yes.
All right, I'll give you a good example of this fear of God. This is what I think, anyway.
Oh, great.
If you ever have a moment, I'll say a negative moment or a moment that you're unhappy with,
mm-hmm.
and you're resisting this moment, why is this happening to me? Oh, my God, this, that, whatever, resisting it, worrying, you are not accepting the will of God over your own.
Mm-hmm.
You are choosing your own over the will of God, and you are not accepting the will of God. And your fear is that release of your control, if you will, to the will of God.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
That is perfect. That is so perfect. Thank you for that, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, that's the catch, too. This idea of the will of God, I mean, when you hear that phrase, and this is just a broad question for all of us to consider, if you hear the will of God, you're not accepting the will of God, does that in the slightest bit arouse a little tingle of fear? Does it arouse the tiniest little, like, oh, the will of God? Like, what is that, you know? And if it does, if you can touch that, if you notice that, that's, again, just a reflection of the fear of God, but notice it. And again, say, hey, Holy Spirit, look, I'm noticing this. I'm noticing I'm having fear come up around this phrase, the will of God, and be willing, be open, and ask to see it differently. Because the will of God is your will. They're one and the same. We want love. We want peace. We want the truth. And we share God's will. We just get obviously sidetracked by ego stuff and thinking that, like, our small will is what needs to be running the show. But the will of God is our will. Thank
so
you for that,
we want to be happy, and that's God's will for us.
Yes, God's will for us.
We want to trust, and that's God's will for us. We want to love, and that's God. What point? Does that clarify it or what?
Right.
I never thought of it that way.
Wait, you never thought of what way?
The will of God.
Ah. Uh-huh.
How did he say that just now? How did you put that?
I said if you ever have a moment that you feel as negative and you're resisting it, you are not accepting the will of God. You are identifying with your own want. This is the way it should be.
That.
And you are not trusting the will of God because you fear giving up that control.
Oh, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so helpful. Thank you, Alan.
Well, I think that's what you're referring to about the fear of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. It's a perfect example. Perfect example. We suffer a lot because of what we, you know, resist in our experience, and being willing to open to it instead of resisting it and asking, you know, help me, I'm willing to see this differently. That's the way out. Awesome. Very good.
I'll give you one other example I read. It claimed that if you're presented again with this negative moment or picture, you will attempt to paint that picture your way rather than God's way.
Wait, does this sound familiar?
Right? That's perfect. I love that. Oh, okay. Well, shall we read another paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Paragraph number 3. The holy instant is the miracle's abiding place. From there, each one is born into this world as witness to a state of mind which has transcended conflict and has reached to peace. I want to read that sentence one more time. From there. So the holy instant is the miracle's abiding place. From there, each one is born into this world as witness to a state of mind which has transcended conflict and has reached to peace. It carries comfort from the place of peace into the battleground and demonstrates that war has no effects. For all the hurt that war has sought to bring, the broken bodies and the shattered limbs, the screaming dying and the silent dead, are gently lifted up and comforted. There is no sadness where a miracle has come to heal. and nothing more than just one instant of your love without attack is necessary that all this occur. That's beautiful. So this holy instant, this quiet, still moment, this now moment, the holy instant is the miracle's abiding place. You know what? I want to pause for a moment. And I just want to see if in the back of this book, if there is a definition for holy instant. There is. Okay, let's read the definition for a holy instant. The holy instant, a moment in which we set aside the past and the ego and enter into another state of mind in which we remember love and experience the miracle. As an out-of-pattern time interval, the holy instant allows the laws of God to intervene, overturning the old pattern and ushering in a new future. A holy instant can be an individual experience, such as in meditation, or it can be interpersonal, which would make it a holy encounter. That's cool. So the holy instant, you know, it's not just like mindfulness. It's not just like being present in the moment. It's a moment in which we're setting aside the past and the ego, and we're actually entering into a different state of mind in which we remember love and experience the miracle. So it's an out-of-pattern time interval. I love that. That's beautiful. So the holy instant is the miracle's abiding place. Each one is born into this world as a witness to this state of mind that has transcended conflict and has reached to peace. It carries comfort outward then. Once we receive it, it carries comfort outward into the battleground, into the world, to show that the world or war has no effects. All those terrible pictures that we see in the world are gently lifted up and comforted. There's no sadness where a miracle has come to heal. And nothing more than just one instant of your love without attack is necessary. So there's our part, there's our work to do, to love without attack. There it is. All this comes about when we love without attack. So this idea of purification, of purifying the mind of our judgments, our hatred, our anger, of handing things, these things over to make space for an experience of a holy instant, it makes space for that love without attack.
I, you know, just watching the news, that's my first mistake. Mm-hmm. When they talk about these children at the border, who mm-hmm. are, that, it's so disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, this paragraph is really the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I, because the other night I had to turn it off. I mean, I was actually in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is where the Holy Spirit, you need to not only give this to the Holy Spirit, but even imagine the Holy Spirit right there with them, in them, helping them.
Yes, Paula, thank you so much for bringing that up. You're absolutely right.
That was the only thing that made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that because, you know, these are our brothers. These are other minds that we are both one. We are both one in many. We are united with all others. And it will go on to say, I think in this, I'm pretty sure it's in this passage or in this section later on, it will go on to say that as you receive the miracle, you have no idea of how much blessing, you know, it creates and extends in the world. We're just not aware of it. So obviously that willingness to still love without attack is huge. And one of the really cool things that I'm trying to remember, the editor, Robert Perry, of this CE edition, was talking about a story with Helen. It might be one of the cameos in the back of this book where Helen was guided. Jesus basically, she was, I know what it was. It was an older podcast. It's not online anymore, but I'm hoping they'll come out with another one that's similar. It was about how Helen prayed. And Helen did not pray to God. Her pattern of prayer was to pray to the minds of her brothers, of other people, of individuals in the world. And she would be guided to pray for them. And this is where I think some of her past life visions as a priestess, she had this role of a priestess to pray for other, directly to other people's minds. So I love that. And I've been doing that. Like, you can pray. And I don't know if this is Robert Perry's take on it, or if this is something from Helen, but I at least I'll say his take on it was that you could even pray when you know that they're sleeping, because more of the ego defenses are down, to just send that love, to be willing to pray directly to that person, that they receive the love, you know, that is there, that you're sending, the love that they are, the love of God. And so I think, Paula, what you felt moved to do was praying directly to those children, to their parents, to, you know, the people involved that are facilitating all this happening. We can pray to their minds, to their right minds, to remember and to know the truth, and that is helpful to them and to us.
It goes back down to, when I am healed, I am not healed alone, because mm-hmm. I had a real healing in the moment that, I mean, I'm not kidding, Corinne, I was terribly disturbed. And as soon as I thought that thought and imagined the Holy Spirit there with them and in them, I felt 100 times better. So it's not only a healing for me, it's, you know, we talked about that last week.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's really wonderful.
It is. I just got goosebumps. I'm so grateful to you, Paula, for bringing that up, because I hope that inspires all of us to say some prayers directly to the minds of others. And obviously, these aren't the only minds that are suffering. There's a lot in the world, and we can send those well wishes out.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And again, just with like political situations, again, too, if we lapse into judgment of those who are seemingly the cause of some of these really, you know, trying circumstances, if we're judging them, we're binding them to their roles, to their bodies. We're keeping it going. Loving without attack is our job. So our willingness to even see the light in those who are, you know, seemingly doing horrible things, that's a big deal. That is a big deal. All right, let's dive into another paragraph. In that one instant, are you healed? And in that single instant is all healing done. What stands apart from you when you accept the blessing that the holy instant brings? Be not afraid of blessing, for the one who blesses you loves all the world and leaves nothing within the world that could be feared. I have to read that one more time. Be not afraid of blessing, for the one who blesses you loves all the world and leaves nothing within the world that could be feared. But if you shrink from blessing, will the world indeed seem fearful? For you have withheld its peace and comfort, leading it to die. I want to read that again one more time, too. If you shrink from blessing, will the world indeed seem fearful? For you have withheld its peace and comfort, leading it to die. Would not a world so bitterly bereft be looked on as a condemnation by the one who could have saved it, but stepped back because he was afraid of being healed? The eyes of all the dying bring reproach and suffering, whispers, what is there to fear?
Doesn't it feel like this paragraph is addressing what we were just talking about reading the paragraph?
As soon as I started reading that, I had that exact same thought. I love it when that happens. Oh. Wow. So yeah, I mean, my gosh, it's perfect. So if we're shrinking from blessing, if we're shrinking from receiving love and extending love, the world will continue to seem fearful because we're shrinking from love, and we've withheld its peace and comfort, leaving it to die. Oh, my gosh. Like, what a responsibility to be a miracle worker. What a responsibility it is to extend love. And there might be times when, like, we feel like we can be anything but loving. We're just in a darn bad mood. But here again, we have these tools to say that page 90 in the FIP, I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. We can always come back to our willingness to that prayer, to receive correction for ourselves so we can be willing to extend that love to our brothers. We don't want to leave anything to die. We don't want to die. We don't want to leave anything else to die either. So what a beautiful opportunity it is to just always have that goal of extending love. Not of our own, not through, not on our own, but like through the Holy Spirit, through us. Because through our own, trying to do it ourselves. That story that I share so many times about going for a walk and trying to bless everybody, and then I ended up exhausted. Like, that doesn't always work so well. But we can be willing to allow that love to extend through us, to be that channel. Oh. Wow. Okay, next page. Consider well its question. It is asked of you on your behalf. A dying world asks only that you rest an instant from attack upon yourself, that it be healed. Come to the holy instant and be healed, for nothing that is there received is left behind on your returning to the world. I want to read that sentence one more time. Come to the holy instant and be healed, for nothing that is there received is left behind on your returning to the world. So in other words, when we go to that holy instant, when we experience that moment of releasing the ego, releasing the past, nothing that we receive, we lose. We always keep what we gain on our returning to the world. Okay. And being blessed, you will bring blessing. Life is given you to give the dying world, and suffering eyes no longer will accuse, but shine in thanks to you who blessing gave. The holy instant's radiance will light your eyes and give them sight to see beyond all suffering and see Christ's face instead. Healing replaces suffering. Who looks on one cannot perceive the other, for they cannot both be there. And what you see, the world will witness and will witness to. This is a juicy paragraph. So a dying world asks only that you rest an instant from attack upon yourself, that it be healed. All attack is self-attack. So we are resting from attack, and we are resting from attack upon ourselves. Come to the holy instant and be healed. I mentioned this paragraph earlier. Nothing that is there received is left behind. So whatever we gain in that holy instant, we keep upon our return to the world. Being blessed, we will bring blessing. Life is given you to give the dying world. This is where I feel like I know I'll speak for myself. For a long time, it was about my peace. I mean, I had anxiety, right? So, of course, I was invested and interested in my peace. But the peace is given us to give the dying world. We only keep it as we give it. We only keep it as we give it. And suffering eyes no longer will accuse, but shine in thanks to you who blessing gave. The holy instant's radiance will light your eyes and give them sight to see beyond all suffering and see Christ's face instead. This is the paragraph that I wanted to emphasize. The sentence, this next one. Healing replaces suffering. Who looks on one cannot perceive the other, for they cannot both be there. Isn't that beautiful? Healing replaces suffering. So this is where I feel like it's so important for us to have our radical honesty, because if there's part of us that likes suffering, if there's part of us that likes the drama, if there's part of us that likes, you know, hanging on to a grievance because it can get us things, you know, the other person will feel guilty, we're not going to heal, because healing replaces suffering. So if we are hanging on to suffering, we can't see both. We can't have healing and suffering. The suffering's got to go for the healing to come in. So we have to make a choice. I don't want to suffer anymore. And in the workshop that Emily and I led yesterday, she brought up this really great section that I want to share. It's one of the it's in the course, and it's in one of, like, it's early on, and I don't remember if it's chapter one or chapter two, and then I think there's a cameo essay about it as well. And the example is that Jesus was talking to Bill Thetford, one of the co-scribes, about Bill's parents. Apparently, Bill was a pretty sickly child. I think he was, like, sick as a young child for a couple of years, maybe bedridden. And his parents pretty much kept that perception of him as sickly, as, you know, worthless. They kept that perception growing up. And Jesus said to Bill that, and the example that Emily used, which is so helpful, is that, like, okay, let's take the example of, like, a child and their parent, and the parents have very strong political beliefs. That child, I feel like usually when I see it, sometimes that child rebels and, like, goes, you know, in the other direction for their political beliefs. They reject the parent's political beliefs to develop their own. And yet, if a parent has a belief that, like, you know, you're a worthless child, well, oh my gosh, well, that I'm going to believe. Like, there's a subtle choice there where we take in some things and don't take in other things. So I'm not going to take in my parents' political beliefs, but I am going to take in their judgment of me. So the first thing to highlight is that Jesus is saying that we have a choice what we take in. You know, we don't have to share in somebody's perception of us if we don't want to. If we decide to, we have to acknowledge that we accepted that into our mind. You know, that's our part. That's our responsibility. I accepted this judgment that you have of me. I accepted it as, like, oh yeah, you know, that must be real. I'm going to now feel terrible about that. So that's just the first piece that Jesus is highlighting. He's saying that it's, you know, you have responsibility for accepting that judgment of you. You didn't have to accept it. You could have rejected it. But the second piece that he says, which is even more mind-blowing than that, is that you accept that judgment in order to attack. So in other words, you accept somebody's poor perception of you, somebody's judgment of you. You accept it in, so now you can be the victim and make them feel guilty and attack back. You're now justified in attacking them because they made you feel this way. So I thought that was pretty – I was so glad Emily brought up that example, because I've always loved that part in the course where Jesus is talking to Bill about that, because that's pretty powerful. And we need to be willing to release all patterns that create suffering in order to know this healing. Because, again, going back to what we just read, healing replaces suffering. It replaces suffering. Who looks on one cannot perceive the other, for they cannot both be there. So again, if there's any part in our mind that wants the suffering, that wants the ability to be the victim so we can point the finger and make the other person feel guilty, if there's any part of us that's hanging on to that and we're like, why am I not healing? That's why we're not healing, because there's part of us that wants the suffering. It is one or the other. Okay, that's kind of a mind blower. So I'm wondering what your thoughts and reactions are to that.
Okay, Corinne.
Yeah.
I think we accept that judgment almost sometimes, think of it almost as a wound, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That wound is a very powerful shield.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm a very sickly boy or whatever. I'm a sickly. So if I'm such a weak and sick person, then I deserve certain special things, and you better be kind to me. And so, this is taking a wound and looking for the power within it. And what it comes down to, I think, is am I deriving power from this wound and protecting myself and other people? Or am I deriving power from my inner peace and love of God?
I love that. I want to make sure I got that. For peace and love of God. I tried to write that down. Because I want to repeat that. So the question, am I deriving power from a wound, or am I deriving power for peace, for the peace and love of God? Did I get that right?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, my goodness. What powerful questions to ask ourselves.
You know, when I was a kid, my mother took me out of public school and put me into parochial school. And they were miles ahead in parochial school. So I was totally lost. And she had a conference. We had to go in and have a conference with the nun. And they decided to hold me back a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember them saying, well, she just doesn't understand. She just doesn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that to coast. I was so pissed off at them when they said that, because I thought, they don't even know me. And I used that to coast through school until I was actually really felt strong enough and on my feet enough to be able to do well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I was a pretty young kid. But I'm going to tell you something. This was the thing about the Course in Miracles. When the Course in Miracles came into my life, was the first time in my life that I realized I can think for myself,
mm-hmm.
and that it doesn't matter what anybody thinks about me.
Mm-hmm.
I was living my life to please everybody. It was so upside down and crazy, I can't even tell you. This is really about liberation.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, from all those stories, from all the littleness.
And this is what really caused tremendous anxiety in me prior to the Course in Miracles.
Wow. That's big. Thank you, Paula. That's really powerful, really powerful example.
Yeah.
Wow, you know what, I'm actually feeling, so I just looked at the clock, we only have like 5 minutes left. I'm actually feeling that this is a good place to stop. So I'm wondering, so we'll pick up where we left off next week. Other thoughts, other comments, other questions? More reflection.
Would you just repeat again what Alan said? You said
question?
You were going to write it down.
Yeah.
No, just now, because I was a little bit preoccupied and I didn't really catch it.
The questions that I wrote down are, am I deriving power from a wound, or am I deriving power for peace and the love of God? So he was just talking about how a wound is like a powerful shield. We can accept their judgments. They become wounds. That's almost like a shield. We might deserve special things.
Yeah.
But it's like we're looking for power. So we have to ask ourselves, am I deriving power from a wound, you know, to get special things or special treatment or make others guilty? Or am I deriving power for peace and love of God?
That's wonderful.
Isn't that? It's marvelous. Oh, so good. I love that. Any other comments or insights or questions from anyone? Lots to think about.
was pretty powerful tonight.
Right? I'm also feeling like this is a good place to stop because it's a lot to absorb.
Yeah, really.
It is a lot to absorb, but it's such good stuff. Mm. Just looking ahead, I will just mention, so next week we will, I'm assuming, finish out this section. It looks like there's just like 5 more paragraphs. The following week, both Deidre and I are going to be away, so we're going to have a guest teacher, Emily Bennington, who I just talked about, who I co-taught this workshop with. She's going to cover the call in 2 weeks because I'm going to be away and Deidre's going to be away. So she'll cover that night, and then I'll be back the following week. So
are you going to Spain?
I'm going to Portugal.
Oh my God!
I know, and I'm going. So again,
it's so exciting.
It is so exciting, but again, just to paint the picture from a before and after anxiety perspective, there is no way in hell I would have been getting on a plane to go to Portugal to be there alone for a while because my husband's going to be here at home. There's no way I ever would have even considered that years ago. And now I'm like, heck yeah. So I'm doing it. I'm going. I'm actually teaching a class for the College of New Jersey, so I'll be over there teaching for majority of the time, although I will be meeting up with a course group there as well, which is going to be fun. But
How long will you be gone?
Less than 2 weeks. So it's just under 2 weeks, which is why I'm only going to miss one Sunday call. But that's like, I still pinch myself. Like, that the anxiety with travel and flying has just fallen away. Like, it's miraculous.
Deidre mentioned that you were going to be doing that. And that's exactly what came into my mind. My God, she has, I mean, like, you've advanced. I mean, I read your book, you know. It's just fantastic. It really is.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. So I'm still like, it's hitting me. Like, okay, wait a second. You don't speak Portuguese. You're going to a foreign country. Like, maybe you need to research some restaurants for, like, dinner the first night. It's like, you're not going to know or anything. Is. And I will, I feel supported because it's for the school and there's going to be another faculty member there. I won't be staying with her or anything, but I'm still going to be on my own. But it's just, yeah, it's so fun. So I just share that. Again, it's just an example for anybody listening with whatever you're struggling with. This, I was going to say this shit, which is, I'm sorry, but this stuff works. Like, this works. It really, really works. And, I mean, Paula, everyone, you've all shared so many incredible healings and miracles and shifts. And when you're healed, as I think it was you, Paula, who said before, when we're healed, we're not healed alone. Mm-hmm. Somebody said that.
I say it to myself over and over because it really is the truth.
It really is. When we
and
are
it's
healed,
motivation.
It is such motivation. It's such motivation. I completely agree with you. Ah, wonderful. Okay, so I will see you all. I'll be back next week, and I'm looking forward to it. And I love you. Thank you, everyone, for doing this work. We are all in this together and healing together, and it's just so exciting. So many blessings. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next week.
Okay, have a good week.
Thank you.
You too.
Have a good week, Corinne.
Love you.
Good night. Bye, everybody. Love you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.